Schlegel, Brian Miller.
Hello.
And this week, this is the first week without the conventions going on, where we actually have two candidates. There is now, it's been suspected all along who the candidates are going to be. Many of us were hoping for something to happen in between now and then, some sort of cataclysm or event or, but no, this is, it is our worst fears have come to pass.
There was a push I saw just today, a kind of never Trump resurgence in the wake of the recent troubles from within, and some big time. I wish I could remember who it was, but some big time pundit or right wing representative type person tweeted, seriously, who's going to be the candidate? Mitt Romney or Cruz?
It kind of makes do they have to redo all the balloons? Which there was, of course, a big talk at the Democrat convention was Bill Clinton's fascination with balloons.
I did not hear about that.
You didn't see that? It was all over Facebook. Is that apparently he slept through Hillary's speech, and then he came up on stage to join her and gave her a big hug, and then the balloons came down, and he just became fascinated with batting balloons around. He looked like a some people might say that he kind of looked like a cat, maybe swatting at a ball.
Sure.
Other people say that it's a very familiar scene that you might see in any dorm room where there's a balloon and a bong.
Sure. I did not. I saw part of the speech, but I saw his speech, but I didn't see. That's the only thing I saw.
Uh huh.
It was kind of on accident, but I did see it.
And then finally, in one of the posts, there's a picture where he's at like where he's on stage, and there's like a little girl, and she thinks he's handing the balloon to her. He's walking around with his balloon, and she's like reaches out for it and starts to grab it, and he yanks it away from her. Like my balloon. Oh wait, I'm sorry. That's my balloon. So there is curiosity about the about what has happened to Bill Clinton. So,
but I mean, maybe after all that responsibility, he's just regressed into like total childlike enthusiasm over trivial stuff, you know?
Sure. Or antibiotic resistant syphilis. you never know. Final stages. But anyway, yeah, what we were going to mention.
Yeah, speaking of antibiotic resistance.
is part of what happened at the convention was they actually found a Muslim couple whose son was killed in Iraq. And they invited them to speak.
Well, that's technically very easy to find, but this was one from our side. I do think that's a sort of essential thing to. No, I'm serious. I'm joking, but not. I mean, there was a lot of Muslim families who lost kids in Iraq.
No, you're absolutely right.
This was a U.S. soldier, yeah.
So they came on and they spoke, and I don't know how it started, but Donald Trump did not show the respect that should be shown for a fallen soldier, He made a few remarks. Some of them I found amusing. Some of them were just over the top. And for the first time, it's been a campaign where Donald Trump has been allowed to say anything. And every time he says something, the big question is, well, is this the end of the Trump campaign? And the polls come out the next day, and he's higher than he was before he said it. And it continually happened through the whole campaign until now. And suddenly his polls are plummeting. And of course, you know, once that, you know, once the blood was smelled in the water, it's that has been the entire news topic for pretty much the past week was. Should he apologize? I guess is the news question.
Yeah, I tell you what, I think from just a purely strategic point, the Democrats should be a little careful here. I mean, they've been sending this guy out, Mr. Khan, to talk a lot. And I think the reason that this was so effective is that it wasn't Trump attacking another political figure that we've seen bloviate and be phony, or attack, you know, attacking some sort of public figure. People are so okay with that now. You know, it's just like celebrity on celebrity crime. Nobody thinks anything of it. But to attack a grieving family, yeah. You know, I think that was what hit at home. And if you turn this guy into too much of a political actor, as it were, that will take away from the effectiveness of it.
Well, yeah, the guy has been in the Trump side has frantically been researching his past. And it turns out that he's not Mr. Khan is not, and I can't say his name without thinking of Star Trek.
I managed to get past that one, but I don't mean that like they'll find dirt on this guy so much as I just mean, you know, at a certain point, citizen activists become just active. I mean, you just get used to seeing them, and you start think. I think it's a default thing, but we start thinking of a person at some point as essentially a professional talking head, whether or not they are, you know, or a kind of messenger, you know, even literal actors, film actors, you know. If you see like if Bill Murray's like, hey, by the way, you probably shouldn't vote for Trump. Okay, okay, Bill Murray said that. But when you see, say, Tim Robbins, you're like, okay, Tim Robbins is going to do his Tim Robbins political thing, you know, like. And so I really do think the one of the big strengths of this was showing how deplorable Trump would be to people who, you know, just. Yeah. People who really lost something significant, and
it's been a strategy that's worked for Democrats for years, though, is they find a victim and they put it out front, and then you suddenly can't criticize the policy that's in back of it.
I think George Bush did a nice job with Cindy Sheehan. I mean, if you go back and look at the stuff that George Bush said about her, he was always sure to say, I disagree with her, you know, in terms of policy, but she has a right to her opinion. And I thought he was very respectful without saying like, without sort of basically saying like, she's right.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that's the way they've operated on policies is to put that victim up front. And when it was healthcare, they found someone, you know, who lost their healthcare and couldn't get treatment for cancer. And when it's, you know.
Yeah, the Republicans do the same thing. They just do it with different issues. This is no different. Everybody wants to put somebody up and say, oh, this is the evils. Republicans are going to put up business people who say that they've had hardships.
Yeah, no, specifically
gonna...
who is the victim?
That's the Republican version of a victim. It'd be like small business people. I mean, I honestly don't watch Republican conventions, but I've seen it done a zillion times. But it's always business people talking about stuff. It's gun rights people talking about how they're going to be the victims of guns being taken away from them. It's the same thing.
But what I'm saying is what the Democrats do is they try to find someone that you can't make fun of. They find someone in a wheelchair. They find someone, you know, who somehow some tragedy has hit their life so much that if you say anything about them, that it just makes you look cold. And even though what you might be saying about them might have nothing to do with the policy, but it's the fact that they're front and center, you can't say anything. You can't refute them. And that's, you know, it's everyone has victimology. Everyone has, you know, likes to personalize issues. But you know, the idea of putting someone right in front of an issue like this is typically Democrat.
I don't buy that.
Well, when you can find a Republican in a wheelchair who's fighting for lower taxes on small businesses, I might acquiesce. But
I mean, the Republicans are every bit as craven as the Democrats. It's just they often don't have access to the same pool of people. It's the same reason they put crappy actors up at their conventions and then complain about the Democrats putting actors up at their conventions. Oh, the Hollywood elite. It's like, yeah, but you were drooling over Antonio Sabato Jr. Not you, obviously.
but inevitably, to get away from us versus them, inevitably, the people that the Democrats pick are they do have connections to the Democrat Party. When that's who was the one that couldn't get her birth control,
and then Sandra Bland?
No.
Oh, wait.
She was a Georgetown law student.
No, yeah. No, I know I got the wrong name. Sandra Bland was a different person. No, I know what you mean, though. She was a dark curly hair. I can picture
her. I know her name. Her name was, it was spelt like Fluke, but it was pronounced.
Sandra Fluke.
But it was pronounced Fluck.
Oh, it, but Sondra. It was also another Sondra. That's where I got the Sondra.
Yeah, thing. And it was always funny to me because she said, you know, she would say, I have never been more mortified than I was by Rush Limbaugh. It's like, no, your last name's Fluck. You went through grade school. I'm not buying it.
but I do think, we got to get off this topic because we're running over time. But I do think I'm both surprised. I'm not surprised that if something was going to stick to Trump, this was the sort of thing that would stick. Because I do think it feels different. Because, elections are about feelings.
Yeah. And it's
for most people.
And basically, he was baited. He took it. And now he's sinking.
Yeah.
And speaking of sinking.
We're baited into the next thing. And on the second episode of Rule 3, or segment, hopefully it'll make it all the way through. It won't cut off. The reason I say that is I was at a movie theater in Grand Rapids, Michigan, watching the new Jason Bourne movie, titled Jason Bourne, hopefully. And about 85 minutes into it, as Jason Bourne was dangling a spy informant over the edge of an embankment with a gun to his head while an assassin
The first time in the movie.
Yeah, right. While an assassin pointed a gun at Jason Bourne.
The first dangled assassin of the movie.
Yeah. There was a power surge or failure. The screen goes black, and they say there's no possible way we're going to be able to get this back up online before. So they cancel all the screenings in the theater for a certain time period. And but I had a show to go to, so I couldn't catch a later one.
Wow.
So then my solution, but I was going to write about it. So then my solution was when I got back, I bought a ticket to a 3 o'clock show elsewhere, and then I just went and ran some errands. And then I came back in an hour and 25 minutes into the movie or whatever.
Not a real endorsement of the movie.
No, I was hating the movie. I was really not enjoying it. And that's one of the reasons I was so mad, because I was like, oh, I got to listen to this again. And I did wind up enjoying the climax a little bit more, but it was still not a good movie. It revealed the Bourne movies to be every bit as formula-driven as the Bond movies, just less fun about it.
So essentially what you're saying is that if you're going to see the new Bourne film, come in about an hour and a half into it. You're not really gonna miss the plot. You could probably pick up the plot from there, and that's the best part.
Yeah, I guess there was one good action scene before that, but then it got boring a little bit. But at the end, it picked up. I suppose it was. Yeah, I was not that into it. But it's I've been writing movie reviews for 16 years, so I've seen literally thousands of movies in the theater over the last decade and a half or so. I've only had that happen a couple of times.
Power failure?
Yeah, I had a projector bulb burn out during Life is Beautiful right as they lead Roberto Benigni behind the barn. they were literally walking behind the barn and the light goes out.
Oh my God,
and everyone's
it's like Sense Around.
Yeah, it was like there was a trigger warning
They shot out the projector bulb.
Yeah, it's like the end of a particular American TV show that people argue about. It's like, oh, is that a statement or is this just a power outage? I don't want to give any spoiler alerts for anybody who hasn't seen the show.
Yeah, you know, actually, that's interesting. They could have just left it there, and then you would have written the review and said it was one of the most dramatic ends to a film ever. The audience and I just sat there in the dark for about 5 minutes, and then no credits rolled. the movie just stopped.
Yeah, and I always think it's interesting when and this happens less now that it's digital projection, but when it was film projection, oftentimes the film wouldn't be synced up with the sound, or it would be caught halfway between, and so you'd be seeing the line in the middle, and you see the top half of the screen, the bottom half of the screen running concurrently.
I miss
that. Yeah, that doesn't happen. But my favorite part of that was the lights go down, that would happen, and you'd always hear the instant murmur, the movie's messed up, whatever. And then everybody looks around, and everybody's waiting for the guy who's going to be like the Spartacus of the group, who's going to get up and go and tell the person or whatever. And then sometimes that guy would just come back with popcorn and you're like, oh, damn, that was not helpful at all. So I had kind of taken it upon myself to always be that guy. Like, as soon as something's wrong, I'm like, I'm getting up, I'm going to go tell somebody.
Wow.
Just because I was like, I'd had that experience so many times of waiting for someone to fix it. I'm like, I'll just appoint that as my incredibly minor social service.
So were you the born informant as well?
The whole theater lost power, so everybody was very aware.
Oh, the emergency lights came on?
Yeah. The generators came on just enough to turn the the theater lights up, but all the screens were dead.
Huh.
And for this whole giant complex. I mean, it was in the middle of this mall with a lot of other stuff too.
Wow. And then, was there a big long line? What happened at that point?
Did they come over
the speakers or something? Or
the ushers came in and told everybody like, hey, here's what's up, and then as soon as they told everybody what was going on, they went back to the doors and they just handed out free passes as you were going out.
Oh, cool. So you have a free pass to a movie
theater I can't get to
in Grand Rapids. We should make that a prize.
I will mail it to any listener in Grand Rapids. Yeah, it's in my back pocket right now.
Yeah, email any listener in Grand Rapids. There's a free movie pass for being a fan of the Rule of Three.
And as the usher pointed out, this includes admissions to IMAX and 3D films.
Wow.
Yeah, this could be a $14 prize.
Wow. That's
IMAX. That's like $17.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you seen the new thing they have? I forget what it's called.
D-Box?
Is that what? Yeah.
It's terrible. I reviewed it for in my movie writings several years ago.
And that's the one. That's the one with the two screens on the side, right?
Oh no, D-Box is like the moving vibrating chair.
Oh okay. No. This is no. They have. It's like three screens.
Oh, so is it like you have like a panoramic view?
Yeah.
Huh, that could be cool.
That's why, yeah, you called it box something. I forget what it is. It's I don't have the article in front of me. So that's the new thing. It's bigger than IMAX. It's like IMAX times three.
Although I got to tell you, IMAX screens get to a certain size, and I don't like them anymore because I don't like watching movies when I can't contain the whole image in my. I mean, that's like film structured that way for a reason. Theoretically, it wouldn't put anything important on the periphery. You know, I'm not saying there wouldn't be interesting applications of it, but I don't like when I can't see the entire thing in one.
Well, I mean, if it's shot for IMAX and with the understanding that it's IMAX.
Yeah, have you ever set a little too close to one of those really big IMAX screens, like the one in Navy Pier that's huge. I don't know if it's still there, but I just remember you couldn't really almost watch the whole movie. You had to like literally pick a section of the movie to watch because it was so big.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to. You're just supposed to see what you can see, and the rest is just to tickle the periphery.
I'm sure there could be applications, but I bet it would be kind of annoying, to be honest. Like I think 3D is annoying.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't like
Matt Damon. We started that when we started on this topic.
You don't like him personally, or you don't like him as an actor or like an action star, or
I can't watch him. Yeah, I can't watch him on the screen because it just I can't get over that it's Matt Damon, and I don't see Matt Damon as likable. I see him as someone who takes himself really too seriously. And for me, that shows in all the roles he plays. He's still Matt Damon.
Have you seen The Informant? That's really funny.
Is it?
God, he's funny in that. A lot of comedians in that. Tom Papa. Bunch of stand-up comics in that. I mean, that was a very underrated movie.
Which one was that?
That's where he plays. It's based on a very popular book that I've heard is excellent. Where he was.
Oh, that's the one that's just out, right?
Maybe
4 years ago. No,
it's a comedy about this guy who becomes an informant on his some big time like farm company. I mean, genetic manipulation of seeds and stuff like that. And he becomes an informant, and he's just this serial liar who's playing everybody, but he's just sort of this like dope at the same time.
Huh.
And it's I remember being very, very funny.
Huh? Yeah, it's Matt Damon. Matt Damon's a deal breaker on a film for me normally, so I haven't seen it. I did like him in Team America.
Oh yeah, that's a Matt Damon. Apparently, he thinks that's funny.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the, who are there other actors?
Because I've always wondered that. I imagined that when you meet him, that he puts out his hand and says Matt Damon, and then watches you to see if you laugh. That's how I've always envisioned meeting Matt Damon would be. Is that he goes, "Hi, Tim Slagle, Matt Damon," and then watches and just waits for you to smirk. And if you smirk, that's it. You're done.
Maybe, I don't know. Have you? Are there any other actors you just can't like that you can't watch? Like that you just.
Yeah, but we're at the end of the segment, and I don't have the list in front of me. So maybe next week.
Ooh, oh my.
Popping for next week.
Final segment of Rule of Three. I had an interesting experience. If you follow me on Facebook, you probably saw a reference to it. I was working at a very good club, Dr. Grin's in Grand Rapids. Really liked that place. They had five really great shows. Working with Michael Palasek from Chicago, who's very funny.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Know the club. Know the comic. What a great show.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a great time. Garrett Elzinga was the MC. He was a very good MC. And we had just great shows all week. It was really fun. I had an interesting hotel calamity that was, I would say, not the fault of the hotel. It didn't, you know, it was just one of those freak things. But
Was it a nice hotel?
It was fine. Yeah, it was a decent, totally decent hotel. It's on the riverfront, which I like. It's pretty close to the club. I stayed there twice before. Always had a very fine time. I think most hotels, I have a joke in my act where I say, you know, hotels, it's like my dad used to say, you know, all hotels are all pink on the inside. And I think that's about hotels. I really do believe that it's like some people I find comedians especially get really fussy about certain things about hotel quality. And to me, it's like up until you get into a really nice hotel or a really bad one, all those middle range are pretty much exactly the same once you get in the room.
Yeah.
I remember Grand Rapids doesn't even register in my mind as a hotel place. So it's just, you know,
but sometimes though, you will get a mid-range hotel and you will get into it and you will realize that it's actually not a mid-range hotel. It has the facade of a mid-range hotel. It might even have the name of a mid-range hotel, but you get into the room and it's just definitely not.
Yes, that actually happened to me on my way out there. I stayed a night in Madison, and I just got a cheap hotel that had the happened in Atlanta too. Had the facade of a hotel, but the soul of a motel.
Yep.
But this place, the riverfront where I was staying, was not the case. It's a, like I said, I've always had a fine time there. I got there, they were remodeling, so they had a few rooms out of commission. And they had been really busy, and so they said, "Oh man, we're really booked up. We're trying to make your reservation fit here." And they said, "Oh, we've got one last room. You're going to get our very last room, and because it's the last one we have left, you get the Senator's Suite."
Wow,
which was cool. I mean, it was a hotel room, like a regular size, but there was a whole another room, exactly, you know, about the same size, but with a bar, like not stocked alas, but a bar area with a full-size refrigerator so I could put some, you know, leftovers and stuff in there, and a microwave and a sink and a couch and a plasma TV and a dining room table. And
Senators need a microwave and a fridge.
Absolutely. And I was, as my wife said, that doesn't sound like the Senator's Suite. That sounds like the divorced dad's suite.
Well, so you gotta make them feel good.
Yeah, right. But if you're staying one night, who cares? But I'm there for 3 days. I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. I'm going to go do some work over on the other side of the suite and, you know, use the refrigerator. I was down. So night one, had a nice show, drank a little whiskey, was in a nice deep bourbon-based sleep. And I wake up and I think, my wife is taking a shower really early. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm very sleepy. And I'm like, I'm in Michigan. She's not here. And I get up and I think, oh gosh, did I leave the sink in the suite? I'm drinking whiskey and I'm probably going to fill my water bottle up. I left the sink on and the thing. I run around and I see in my sleepiness water kind of trickling out front of the bathroom door. I go in, not while it was in use, just a freak plumbing thing, you know, the connector ring on the intake pipe at the bottom of the sink just blew off, I guess. I mean, just.
Oh man.
Just, you know, who knows how many years that thing had been on there, no problem. But it just goes. And so water sprayed on
You could probably guess by the age of the sink and the hotel. And how long do you think it had been on there?
It didn't look old.
10,
you know? I mean,
20,
I know they were... I don't know. I mean...
5? 4?
You know, 10.
Okay. That's
you know? But not, it just certainly didn't look like, it wasn't like, well, of course that happened. You know, I mean, everything in the bathroom looked fine. You know, it looked new enough. And in fact, maybe it had been recently remodeled. And a lot of times, you know, the new ones are the ones that the tension builds up and it pops after 10 days. So maybe they just put a new one on and that's why it went. That can happen.
Yeah. They might've had to put a new fixture on it. They might've, it might've been like a leaky faucet or something and they didn't put it on the.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously the thing, it would run fine. Everything's fine. And then it blows off. So. The water spraying on the floor. So my first thought in my sleepiness is, okay, I'm gonna throw a towel down and soak the water up and then run out and tell the guys. And I take the full-size bath towel and I throw it down on the water and it floats to the back of the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, this is a little worse than I thought.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like the Senator Kennedy suite.
Oh, nice Chappaquiddick reference. So I run to the front desk and I was like, hey man, there's a big, I mean, I throw my clothes on, I'm all soggy and run through the water. And the water's like spreading out now into the carpet of the hotel room. And I run to the front desk and I was like, hey man, there's a big water leak in my room. You need to come ASAP. And the guy's like, yeah, okay. He's like a droopy doodle a little bit. He's like, okay. And I was like, he's like, what's the room? And I was like, it's in the senator's suite. And he rolls his eyes at me and he goes, sir, what's the room number? To which I respond, that's the part you want to argue about right now?
No, it's like, we have a lot of senator suites, sir.
Right. in my head, I'm thinking, hey, you named the stupid thing. I didn't name it, but that's the sign on the door. It says the senator's suite.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe that's just what they told everybody.
No, it says on the door, senator's suite. Okay. It is named, so named.
Okay.
And so I was like, you know. This is not my vanity. It's like one of those people who named their cars or something. I mean, this is the name on the damn door. So so the guy goes down. We turn the hallway. Now the water's coming out underneath the door into the hallway. And the guy's like, oh. Got a little pep in his step.
This is bad.
So he finds the shutoff valve, turns it on. There is, you know, several inches of water in the hotel room pushing out into the carpeted area. And dude mops it up and gets it all mopped up or whatever, kind of. And so, well, you know, we'll send the maintenance guys when they show up. But the thing is, the guy goes, here's the thing. I'd love to give you another hotel room, but we're totally booked for the weekend. So for the next 2 days, I stayed in what I referred to as the soggy senator's suite.
What? So that's all he had to do was just that little knob under the sink?
Yeah. I mean, he found, it took him a minute to figure out where the shutoff valve was down there. But he found it.
Huh. And so you didn't think yourself, I wonder if there's a shutoff valve under here?
I mean,
you've been renting too long. You're going to enjoy home ownership.
Well, I mean, keeping in mind, this is not like a problem I came upon after I'd, you know, eaten my grapefruit and had a cigarette and read a newspaper. Like, I was awoken at 5:55 after having gone to bed at like 2:55, you know. I was like completely just delirious with confusion and sleep.
Wow. And it was like, it was out the door into the hall.
I put some clothes on first, but yeah, it was, yeah.
Almost like those cartoons where you open the door and like three people come out in a rubber raft.
Yeah. Whoosh. Yeah, exactly. like an above ground pool gave way.
It's I've stayed at places where I've stayed in senator suites. And usually what it is, it's a it's like a conference room with a pull out bed. And so I've stayed in those places before where it's not even really a room, and it's, and they usually have a name like that. But that sounds like you actually got a probably a party room. That's probably what it's normally used for.
Oh yeah. It would be like a good I don't know if they have like UFC, you could, you know, and you and your buddies wanted to watch whatever channel they had, you'd rent that and all watch it together or something. It was, yeah, that's why they had the bar in there and everything. But it was nice. I mean, it's a lot of room. You had to wear your shoes for the rest of the weekend because the carpet's squelched.
Well, it's usually because I've done a lot of political functions.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have like a kind of like a convention at a hotel, They'll do hospitality suites.
This would have been an ideal like hospitality suite. Yeah,
that's what I'm guessing.
It's very much set up for that. But there's a really great play called Hospitality Suite that I really like. I would recommend. They turned it into a movie with a different name, starring Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito.
Huh.
It's worth looking up. It's about a guy's at a convention, and it's kind of a David Mamet light. But I think it's kind of like
Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, very much. It's like a little more. It's like if David Mamet had written Cedar Rapids.
I've stayed at that hotel from Cedar Rapids, by the way.
Nice. I remember enjoying that movie more because I have worked in Cedar Rapids and they clearly filmed it there. And I was like, boy, this is like every hotel you stay in.
I hate to break it to you, Brian. That was filmed in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
They definitely had outdoor shots of Cedar Rapids.
They did, but the hotel where everything took place.
I guess I just mean like usually when you see a hotel in a movie, it's like it's never what I stay in. And I remember that hotel, by that, like the pool and everything about that hotel just looked like a real mid-level hotel.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a fancy. It was in its day, it was kind of like a fancy hotel. And it's still kind of nice. I stayed there a couple times actually. I did a convention there 1 year, another time I believe Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase put me up there.
Ah,
so
I've heard that's a great room.
Yeah, another great room. We could talk about that more, but I think we're over.
Yes, the flood of hotel stories must cease.
I thought I did have some, but I didn't have time. Yours was so good. Yours took up the whole segment. So,
well, there's always next time.
Once again, timslegel.com, all the episodes there.
Yep, brianmillercomedy.com and Real Brian Miller and
iTunes.
iTunes, yes. All important. Come up on iTunes. You're there.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, exactly.